Welcome to the HMO Success Podcast. My name's Wendy, and this podcast will help you invest in houses of multiple occupation. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Wendy Weekly. And my guest this week is Kevin Whelan from Wealth Builders. Hi, Kevin.
Hello, good afternoon, and thanks for welcoming me to your show.
You're very welcome. Well, it's great to have you on, Kevin. I've known of Kevin for a while, and we kind of connected about a month ago for something else that I was doing. And Kevin very kindly came and spoke to the people that I was working with, some of my clients, and the value was absolutely tremendous, absolutely tremendous. And I'm really a big fan of what he does. I think his organization has got some tremendous values. And I think as an individual, he really understands about building wealth, hence the name of his organization, which is Wealth Builders.
That's on the tin, Wendy.
Exactly. So, Kevin, can you just give us a sort of brief synopsis of your background and how Wealth Builders came into existence?
Yeah, so, you know, my background is I'm an economist, a financial advisor, somebody who's studied kind of financial things all of my life. And Wealth Builders kind of came about simply because I thought the financial services industry, which I'd been in for quite a long time, really stopped serving the customer. You know, the technology was driving down costs, but they weren't bringing down costs. Flexibility was coming in as people changed their lifestyle from one job for life and just relying on the stock market. It just seemed to be a requirement for much more flexibility. And I don't think there was a plan to allow people to do that. And then, you know, the holistic nature of wealth. Wealth is no longer just about, you know, getting a good job, sticking with the pension, and that's your whack. It doesn't work anymore. So it's about trying to understand that there are many ways to create multiple streams of recurring income, which essentially means that you become financially independent. So independent of the job, independent of your business, independent of the state of the economy or the state of the pandemic. You just have bulletproof finances. And we've created that step-by-step, easy-to-follow process for anybody who can get to that point, really. That's
fantastic.
It's a real drive and a passion to help people become financially independent. That's what Wealth Builders does.
And when did you start Wealth Builders?
Well, Wealth Builders has probably been embrained or in my brain, really, since the early 90s. Because I started creating wealth for myself, and there wasn't an easy plan. There were no mentors, no guides. So I had to sort of plan that out all to myself. And the reason for that is the tragic death of my dad, who died at 46. And because he and I were genetic peas in a pod, I thought, well, hang on a minute. You know, if I don't get old bones, well, look at me now, I'm way past 46, right? So I did survive the old geezer. But the point was there wasn't a plan. And I thought, well, if, you know, as a young economist, if I just save money from my salary, I wasn't going to make this happen. I just couldn't leave a big enough legacy in that short of a time frame. So with the permission of my wife-to-be, I said, look, I'm going to stop trading time for money. Didn't use that language then, but I'm not going to stick with a job. I'm going to build things and own things that you can own. And the kids that we have, and I've got three grown-up kids, can own as well. So it sort of was in my brain since the early 90s, but it's been officially probably being taught since 2008, when the credit crunch came home and I saw the devastation of people with money on the stock market just losing 30, 40%. And if that happens, you simply can't recover from that. So we've been teaching it now for that length of time and helped thousands of people kind of cross the bridge from being financially insecure to financially completely independent. And
which is a wonderful position to be in, isn't it?
Absolutely workable for anybody. And it normally takes 5 to 7 years, I say. It took me a lot longer because there wasn't a plan. There was no guide, you know. So now I position myself and my company as an ethical guide that helps people who want to cross over that bridge and not focus on any one asset. You know, there are seven and only seven assets you can use to build wealth, and we're agnostic on that. So we don't care if people build their wealth in property, in business, in books and royalties, or all sorts of different things. We just want to teach that holistically, so the combination of wealth in a family can be many different things rather than just one.
Yes. Oh, I think it's a great aspiration to have. And I think that the sooner people get started on that plan, the better. Because as you can say, for some people, it happens very quickly, maybe a matter of a year or a couple of years, depending on what strategy they adopt and really go deep into. And for other people, it does take a little bit longer. And of course, it depends on so many other factors, such as your own commitments in terms of your, you know, your life commitments, your responsibilities, your caring commitments, your goals, what value you want others to have from your life as an individual. All of these things I do think do make a very big impact and a difference to how long it'll take you. For me, it took me about 2.5 years to become financially free. And that was because I focused on HMOs. But there are lots of different routes to get to that same end. And, you know, I think that it's just great to have you, if you like, at the helm, bringing together almost a sort of umbrella of different options for people so they can see how they can use what they already have to build that security, but also long-term income, which, as you say, does not rely on them swapping time for money, which is, I think that, you know, a lot of people are in that sense where they feel I'm in a rat race. I'm trapped. Mm. And I think with COVID, not only are we sort of slightly trapped physically in our own homes, I think it's exacerbated and really kind of, you know, magnified that sense that people feel about being trapped in their lives. So this is a real message of hope, Kevin, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think you're quite right that what the pandemic has done is shown the fragility of the security of job income. And also, in some cases, you know, although I'm so delighted and pleased for you that you managed to find a strategy that works, but there are others who thought they found a strategy that works. Let's take property as an example. Perhaps they thought service accommodation was the strategy that worked. And then the pandemic blew that apart. And then, you know, the risk is there. So we kind of have a view that says, you know, if you can learn all of the 7 assets, then you can bring the right combination to where you want to be. So if you build your wealth on HMOs, perfect, very high cash flowing, lovely strategy. But then as you do so, build other assets in addition to that, which then increases the diversification, increases the degree of your knowledge, and also increases the wisdom that you can pass on to the next generation as well. Because what's for sure, legacy was a big part of my plan, is the next generation of children, you know, will be poorer than the generation before. So people like you and I, Wendy, who are pioneers of the wealth of our families, you need to not just embrace that wealth, but to pass on the wisdom as well as the responsibility to give back and add back rather than take the money. And as we see in many different cultures, you know, they often say shirt sleeves to shirt sleeves in 3 generations or clogs to clogs in 3 generations. You know, the money dissipates when wisdom doesn't go with that. So the reason we prefer to teach all the assets is not to say you should have 7 assets in your life and then multiple strategies within each one if you want to dive deeper, but just to know them all, and then actually you can bring that extra knowledge to your family. So you might like HMOs, but they might want to write books. You know, you might like HMOs, but they want to invest in the stock market and they feel a real passion for that. So anybody can kind of combine and connect, a bit like a jigsaw puzzle or building the ideal home that you would have in your mind, but with Lego bricks with different colors. And you just bring your own style, personality, wealth dynamic, all of those things to bear. And that's what's great. It's a combination of art and science. The science is the pillars themselves, what we call the assets. We refer to them as pillars. And the artistry is with the creativity and the imagination of the people who put them to work.
Fantastic. Now, one of the pillars is, of course, pensions. And one of what I wanted to bring you here today, Kevin, to talk about is using pensions, particularly because the people in the group who'll be watching this and who'll be watching the recording of this later will probably have in the forefront of their minds, how does this help me to grow my HMO portfolio? And what's possible with pensions? And I have to say that when I first heard you and I first started to learn about how pensions can be used for property, I just thought, wow, this is an amazing strategy because it actually opens up so many doors to new business partnerships, to relationships, to helping other people to create wealth as well. And that's to me one of the power, the powerful aspects of using pensions. Mm. So Could you tell us a little bit more about pensions and how they can be used for investing in property?
Yeah, pensions and property don't go together, Wendy. Everybody tells you that. But of course, they can do, and they can do in three ways, really. The idea behind a pension, you know, historically, people, you know, I can imagine now your audience now going, it's lunchtime, this guy's talking about pensions, I'm going to press snooze, you know, and I'll come back to a message later. Don't press snooze when it comes to pension. For many people, it's a huge pot of money. It's often their biggest kind of liquid bank account they've got in their life. And they accumulate that normally as a part of either their work life, you know, they've got it through an employer, or they made a decision to contribute, whether that idea came from parents or from themselves. And it kind of tends to accumulate. And what people do is they put it in the stock market. And while I'm not saying there's anything wrong with the stock market, one of the things about the stock market is true is there are high fees associated with the ownership of that asset. And usually you can't add any value. You know, you can't just say, well, I own Nike shares, so I'll buy a pair of trainers and the share price will go up. There's nothing you can do every day to add value. But when you look at what people do with property, the creativity they bring, and they add value, they create value, they're getting cash flow, not just capital. When you combine that knowledge and say, well, if pensions was just regarded as cash, if Rishi Sunak said in the budget on the 3rd of March, you know, pensions, we're not going to do that anymore. You can just do what you want with your money. My bet is most people, those who are committed to their own independence, probably wouldn't pile back into the stock market and put it there. Mm. They wouldn't stop that merry-go-round. And the great thing about some pensions is it's possible to say, hey, it's my money. And if I've got the right inclination, the right skill, the right training, just like any asset in life, I could learn how to take complete control of that money and use it for my own purposes. Now, that could be for, you know, specifically your skills HMO. So one of those things you can do is, you know, you imagine you convert your pension, you basically take it from the stock market and you own it and control it into a specific vehicle, which is known as a small self-administered scheme. Now, that sounded boring, didn't it? The language of pensions is so impenetrable and grey and dreary, it's terrible. Nobody would win a marketing prize for that word. But however, when you speak the language of SAS, it's very exciting. So SAS, or small self-administered scheme, is just you saying, I want to be the owner of my pension, not an insurance company, not my old employer, me. And I want to control that. Now, that was really important to me as somebody who's very passionate about making my own decisions. Now, what you can do then is you can lend some of that money and be a bank and lend some of that money to your limited company and go off and do more HMOs. Now, there are rules, of course, so I won't go into the detail. You can also use that money to buy property that you convert to an HMO. So you could buy a pub and convert it, a barn and convert it. You could even buy an old church and convert it if you get sort of, you know, weird thought about being converted in a church. You can do so many things.
I like it. That's a good money. One.
Oh, you got that, right? So there's just so many things that you can do once you understand that the art of what is possible. So it's the combination. Science, you can own your own pension. Artistry, use your creativity to make it work. And the third aspect of it is there are some types of property which are genuinely usable as far as pensions are concerned. So we know commercial property, very common. It's not an HMO, but some people using commercial property and turning it into multi-let commercial property, or they're using it for serviced accommodation or some form of supported living where there are certain exemptions that allow you to use the money in that way. So again, lots of possibilities here, but not the detail. I'm not going into the technical or the compliance or the need for advice or not, but just the art of what's possible really is a good
thing. And I think that's the key here is that, of course, with every strategy, there are always rules. There's also, you know, there's the nitty-gritty of the detail, the regulations, the form filling, the admin that goes alongside it. And I think that without getting into all of that, what we're trying to do here really is help people to understand, as you said, the art of what's possible. Because SaaSes really are an incredibly versatile tool. And one of the things that has really struck me about SaaSes is the ability to help other people who might not be property people, but they have their own business, they may have a pension, and that pension is sitting there really giving them next to nothing at the moment. And yet you pair up with somebody like that, who really isn't really interested in doing the conversion and who isn't really interested in property. What they're interested in is looking at their SaaS and going, yikes, I'm getting less than 1% return. I wonder how I can increase that. Mm-hmm. And suddenly by utilizing their funds, you can create a win-win for you and for them. And to me, that's where this is such a powerful strategy.
Yeah, and that's an interesting one. You know, the power of that, I call it the double-edged sword. You know, on the one hand, you swish towards yourself, you know, you're right-handed, you go that way, and you're using the benefit to you personally. On the other hand, you know, you can use that money. You become a bank, essentially, is what you do. And when you become a bank, you can either bankroll yourself or you can bankroll other people. And everybody wants to build wealth their own way. So if you're not inclined to be the developer, you're not inclined to be the HMO owner, but you want to participate in and share some of the high returns that people like you and others are getting, there's no reason why you can't do that. And a SaaS allows that to happen. And a principle called a third-party loan. Again, unusual terminology, but it just means lending outwards to a third party. So you can lend inwards to self or outwards to other people. And both are equally possible. Both have different sets of rules, but it's, you know, it's one of the greatest things I see is the, again, the artistry of collaboration that two people can get together and create much more power and synergy than if the HMO expert is sitting with running out of money before, you know, most people in property run out of money before they run out of ambition. So they run out of money. So they stall. The person with the money is stalled because their money's either unsatisfactorily in cash, giving them nothing or virtually nothing, sometimes nothing, or it's in the stock market, which is giving them an uncertain return with often heavy fees. So if you can remove that opaque position and say, could we work together, collaborate, and you get a great return and I get a good return, and we can share not just in the value of that, but we can give a contribution back to the world and make an impact because we're housing certain types of tenants, we're helping people with supported living, we're helping people with green energy properties and sustainable properties, we're helping refugees or, you know, anybody who needs certain help, we're helping the homeless. There's so many additional value benefits to society when these things happen. And that's why I'm always keen to enthusiastically get that message out. And, you know, thank you for sharing in my enthusiasm.
Well, absolutely. So it's somebody who's interested in using either their own pension pot or somebody else's pension pot to invest in property. And as you say, there are some regulations that they would need to adhere to, and they need to understand what those are. And of course, they need to really be utilizing the skills of a specialist to enable it to be set up correctly and to I think educate themselves as well, because I would say that this is a more advanced usage of funds. And whenever you get into those, you know, more sort of advanced strategies, it's very important to get proper professional advice. I've seen too many people try and sort of do it ham-fistedly on their own and get into all sorts of pickles. And we really don't want people to do that. We want them to do this properly and to understand from the outset what is possible and, you know, what the rules and regulations are as well, so that they remain within the correct guidance. They don't get into trouble, but they also don't lose money as well. Yeah. Somebody maybe who's just kind of thinking about this, Kevin, or beginning to think, oh, well, I've seen a project that could really fit in. This would be perfect for the project I've just seen. Just had a phone call from my commercial estate agent, or I've just seen a property and I think it's going to be coming up for sale, or I've met somebody who's talking about selling their property, but I don't yet have the funds to invest with to buy and refurbish that property. Yeah. How can they utilize a SaaS to do that?
That's it's an interesting question that sort of unravels some additional layers, I'm afraid. And one of those is, so I'll answer the technical question in a moment, but I just want to go to the heart of relationships here, because I understand that those people who are involved in property tend to get excited. you know, they tend to fear the loss of an opportunity, right? And that's what motivates them and drives them. And you see that in the property industry all the way through. And I tend to refer to them as the driven developers, you know, developer who wants money to continue their journey. It's like putting more fuel in the tank for their property journey. And we get that. And I love the enthusiasm. However, if you think about it from the point of view of an investor, whether they're a private investor with cash or money in a pension that they want to use as a loan, you know, number one, they've got to take the time to understand the pros and cons of SaaS, because the SaaS isn't for everybody, and to decide whether they want to orchestrate and get their money in that place, which probably would take 90 to 100 days, something like that. So there's a journey time for them, but there's also the journey time of building the relationship with investors. You know, so finding an opportunity that you can see tomorrow, it's too late to find an investor who's ready to invest the day after tomorrow. It's about investing in the long-term nature of those relationships. So I'd say, in a way, that the skill of this is funding. So just as there's finding properties, fixing properties, filling properties, there's funding of properties. And what a SaaS does, or the pension, you know, 2.2 trillion. I mean, there's huge sums of monies in pensions that are just underperforming and underleveraged everywhere I see it. And for those who it's right, if they could talk together, they could, and you can talk in communities. I mean, look how well orchestrated and well connected people are in property. There's so many different ways that you could be having these conversations, mm-hmm. and helping people take the time. And while they're waiting, and property's a waiting game, isn't it? You find a property, then you wait for something else, and then you wait for something else. Lots of waiting time. Well, that's the connection time. That's the time to be, you know, making great connections, demonstrating what you do. And we've got a whole process that teaches the developers the art of speaking the language of SaaS, and getting to the five ROIs that all investors want, but they don't know they want. And once you discover it, you've got a pathway to become irresistible to receiving money from third parties. And if you ask me about that, I'll cover that for you. But the question about how to do it is a combination of you getting ready, them getting ready, and then having a robust process of compliance and due diligence, which all sounds very hard work, but it isn't. It's only hard work because when people discover something for the first time, they will often try and cram themselves so full of knowledge. And then the very cramming does not draw the real value out. It tends to cram the knowledge in. And I don't encourage that, because to me, education, the whole stem of the word education, educare, means to draw out. People seem to be compelled to cram in. So the drawing out is best done by people who've done it. So being connected to those who've done it before, which is the art of coaching and mentorship and guidance. Find a guide who's done it. Then when you can see it mapped out, you can do it step by step, slowly and surely. And it's very easy to do, like anything. You know, the first time you do anything, you're not going to be the best at it. So there's a whole bunch of skills that need to be learned, but those skills are teachable and they are available to learn, just like any property strategy or any wealth building strategy.
Kevin, you're talking my language. I absolutely love that. I totally agree about the educare, that I think people have this expectation that they can go on a course or read a book and suddenly they're going to be an expert in something and be able to do it. But actually, part of the art of being a good property person, whether that's a developer or an investor, whether you're whatever strategy, whether you're flipping, creating HMOs, working in social housing, or a mixture of all of those, the key is to bring yourself into that business. The key is to make it work for you as an individual, and not see yourself as a square peg in a round hole. And certainly when I started investing in property, it was very male dominated. It's still significantly male dominated, but less so. I was a sort of fairly young woman with a young family, and I bought properties at auction. And I remember walking into the auction room feeling completely overwhelmed. Right. I was the wrong skin color, I was the wrong age, and I was the wrong gender. And all of those things made me very nervous about getting involved in property. Right. If I could have found somebody who was maybe a little bit older than me, but also female, who had a similar, you know, it was maybe a few steps ahead, I would have loved to have worked with somebody like that. And it, actually, at that time, it was impossible to find somebody like that. But over the years, I have found those individuals. And as you say, finding somebody who's done it before, whose footsteps you can follow in, whose ideas you can learn from and borrow and adapt for yourself, is really critical.
That's a really interesting point you make, and I think I'm also finding there's some parallels here in the world of SaaS. You know, we've helped thousands of people kind of pick up their pensions, stick them on their back, and trudge across to the world of building their own wealth. You know, and that's how I see it, is kind of crossing a Rubicon. But the conviction to say, I'm ready to learn, is more important than trying to make sure you understand everything before you start. And that's just true of life. You know, you've got to start with the first step. And it's a bit like going in a car. You know, you're going on a journey. You've just got to put the fuel in and you've got to get going and you've got to enjoy the journey and be prepared to do that. If you want to know that every traffic light is green before you set off, you'll never set off. And that's what I find people will often do. Now, in the world of SaaS, what I've found to be true is only 25% of the people who own SaaSes are women. Now, for some reason, there seems to be a less willingness for women to grasp the nettle of their pension than men. I don't know why that is. Often it's because they have had a caring role. They've forgotten pensions. You know, they changed their name when they got married often. And they just, oh, no, I didn't work there long enough, or it wasn't. Or for some reason, you know, they delegated to somebody else, or somebody else is making the kind of pension or financial decisions. I'm not trying to label anybody particularly and say that's true in society. I'm just saying it's certainly true in the world of pensions. It's male dominated, and I suppose like many wealth building assets, it tends to be more male dominated. And we would just love it for more women to, you know, come and take control and go, you sassy sisters, and get yourself sorted and, yes, and just go for it and understand that even if it's not right for you, just, you know, just
sassy. We just need to become more sassy. That's all it is.
I'm just looking forward to that group, right? So, you know, who can get that? So, no, I'm sharing your thoughts, and it's the same way I'm seeing now with property, increasing things like modern methods of construction, where, you know, people are building or seeing their properties being built in factories, so they have less trouble dealing with that emotional challenge of dealing with builders being a woman, you know, because it's built in the factory. So, you know, you don't have to have those complicated dialogues with sexism radiating back at you. So many different ways I'm seeing women taking much more control, and amen to that.
Absolutely. Now, Kevin, one of the questions that sometimes people ask me, and I'm not an expert on pensions, I would direct them to see you if they want further, more detailed information and more personal recommendation for their situation. But what is the difference between a normal, let's say, a company pension that somebody might have from working with an employer, a SIP, which is a self-invested personal pension, okay, and a SAS? Are you able to just describe for people who maybe, you know, they may have a company pension or might not have any pension at all, but if they were thinking about, you know, developing a pot of money that could be used for property, what's the difference between these different pots, and why can you only use certain ones of these pots for investing in property?
That's a great question. The thing to recognize that, you know, the purpose of a pension is a very tax privileged vehicle. And all pensions are the same in that regard. So they're free of income tax, free of corporation tax, free of capital gains tax, and free inheritance tax. That's a lot of taxes they're free of. And you can have £1 million tax free before tax starts to get a bit, you know, complex. So my aspiration for everybody is build £1 million tax free. Why wouldn't you want to do that? Now, the difference then is, to build £1 million tax free when all of your money, you're told where to invest it, and you have to invest it in the stock market. If the stock market on average returns 6% per annum gross, and then you pay 2% for the privilege of getting that through financial institutions and advisors and so forth, and you're getting a net return of 4, it's going to take a very, 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 very long time to build £1 million. See, the thing about a pension is just a trust fund, but somebody else is the trustee. In all pensions, there's a trustee. The trustee is in control. If it's your employer, the employer's in control, or whoever they delegated that to. If it's a SIP, which has the illusion in many cases of you being in control, but you have control over the stock market investments you choose. So you can choose, well, I want this fund or that fund, but it's still largely stock market. There are some SIPs that will give you two choices, which funds you choose, but also commercial property. So there are some SIPs will allow you that, but that's as far as it goes. So in other words, because the trustee is somebody else, an insurance company, a financial institution, or your employer, they ultimately control how many things you can do and what they will allow you to do. Because as the trustee, they legally own the asset. You're the beneficiary of the asset. So they tell you what to do. A SAS, you are the trustee. You choose what to do. SASIA.
Freedom.
So for people like me, who, it's not like I'm a control freak. I just don't like being told what to do. I don't want anybody to say, Kevin, you can, Kevin, you can't. I want to bloody choose. Pardon that. I want to choose. Now,
you feel strongly about it. And so do I.
I'm very passionate about it. important to me for sure. Now, once I know how to take control, which then puts a responsibility on me to understand what do I need to do? What can I do? What does the law allow me to do? Which is a bit of education and having somebody professionally there, just as you've got a professional trustee in a SIP or your workplace pension, is having a professional trustee in your SAS, because there are some rules. You've just got to do reports to the revenue every year to make sure it's all tax-free. We want to keep that tax-privileged status. The key to understand then about SAS is the law allows you to do what you're capable of doing. So if you're capable of buying property, go buy property. If you're capable of investing in business, go invest in business. If you want to collaborate and connect and be a bank and be a lender to other people, go be a bank. You know, so you can bring yourself to the table. So your pension then becomes a part of your wealth future, not a part of the historic past when you made decisions when you were younger. Mm. It lays a like in its focus. You just have to learn what to do. Now, my experience is that it does three things dramatically differently. One, if it brings a higher potential return on investment. Now, I talked about the stock market delivering a long-term, say, 6% gross. What would your audience say their capability is in terms of HMOs? What would they say their typical ROI would be? It's going to be more than 6, right?
Absolutely. I would recommend it's at least 25.
Okay. Well, even if it was 8, or 10, and you don't have the same fees because you're not paying for funds under management. You're just paying a professional to run the administration, like a bookkeeper. It's a bookkeeping service for the most part, which is a fixed fee. And as your pension grows up, the fixed fee stays the same, or you know, might change with inflation, but as a percentage of the total, it shrinks and shrinks and shrinks over time. So when you reduce the fees and increase your ROI, that increases the speed at which your pension grows. You're absolutely giving a turbocharge to the vehicle and removing the handbrake. That's not a bad thing, potentially. The second is all pensions are a form of future income. Well, if your money's in the stock market, you're getting 6 and you're getting a net 4 after charges, how much would you be willing to take out of your pension as an income? Well, 4. Okay, then. So if you've got $500,000 in your pension, right, you built a decent pension pot and you're taking 4%, that's 20 grand. Mm-hmm. But now if you've worked out you're capable of getting 10 and you can therefore comfortably draw 10, mm-hmm. same $500,000 gives you 50 grand, not 20 grand. Mm-hmm. Then you've got a bigger legacy to leave, because as you're not spending all the money you're earning, you've given yourself a buffer. You've got a bigger legacy pot for the next generation.
So okay. And that is, of course, where the beauty of SASs lies, is that it's flexible. You have power over it. You've got choice. You've got control. You can use creative strategies. It ticks the box for so many people. However, what about, are there some people that you would say, because of their personal situation or the personal circumstance, SASs are not suitable for?
Sure. You can only have a SaaS if you've got a limited company. So if you're a sole trader, you can't have one. If you're not willing to take responsibility and you're not proactively willing in a hands-on and accountable way to take responsibility for your wealth, you cannot delegate a SaaS. You can't do it. Now, if you've got your money in a workplace pension, you've delegated it. It's the tool of delegation. Now, delegation very quickly turns into abdication, in my view, which is why so many people have a terrible relationship with their pension. It might be in a filing cabinet or it might be in a drawer, but it's not really understood, and it certainly isn't growing as well as it could do. So you need to be entrepreneurial in mind, in spirit, and in action. And if you're willing to do those things, plus have a limited company, you should give it a good long look and then assess the pros and cons for yourself. And whether you choose a SaaS or not, frankly, I'm agnostic on it because I like to work with people who know it's good for them. So it's not really.
What about initial pot of money, though? Would you recommend that people have an initial pot of money to be able to put into that SaaS or to with an aim of growing it to a certain level? Because there are obviously fees for setting it up and running it and so on.
Yeah, it's a good question. And I'd say the answer to that is it depends. And it would depend on one fundamental thing that nobody really wants to know. Your date of death. Right? If you knew that, you'd know whether to take one out. Because if you knew you're going to die tomorrow, don't do it. Right? Your current pension will do a fine job. But if you're 40 and you think you've got a reasonable chance of living to 80, you've got 40 years of not just what you've got, the fuel that you could bring from the history of your life, but the profits that you're making in your business for now in the next 40 years that you can shelter. And instead of paying taxes to the government in corporation tax, you're reinvesting that money in property without any tax bill. You know, yeah. And when the government are pressing so hard to get the taxes back to pay for the pandemic, you know, one of the greatest privileges is to understand how tax-free, you know, pensions are. And SaaS just brings that tax-freeness, compounding on higher returns. So it's tax-free on bigger returns. So I'd say it can't. So the answer to the question is, if you've got a reasonable expectation of life and a reasonable expectation of a willingness to get involved, then you just create one. Because, you know, you can create one probably for, you know, if you're just starting with no money, you just want to create one, maybe £1,200 to £1,500 for the rest of your life. Mm. You divide that by 40 years, you know, it's teeny tiny.
It's peanuts.
It is very small amounts of money. And I think the idea that sometimes is peddled by the tradition of the financial services industry that SaaS is somehow or more expensive. It's true that you have to create your own trust. You've got to go through the process of getting it approved, and that's just that administration, really. So there is an establishment cost. But there's establishment cost in being an entrepreneur. If you own a shop, you've got to do something to get ready to do business. If you own a restaurant, you've got to do something to get ready to do business. If you own property, you've got to spend some money before you get the cash flow. This is what entrepreneurs do. They spend a little bit of money to reap the rewards. This is life. When people are not entrepreneurs, they will resist the cost of everything and they become what I call the DIYers, you know. So there are three types of people in that I meet, and I know them very quickly once they start talking to me, right? I call them the drifters, who just cram themselves educare, but it's boom, 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 filled, and they do nothing. And they're looking for the magic bullet, right? And you see them because they want to know so much more. And it's like, you don't need to know everything to do something. And then the second is the DIYers, who everything is about cost. There is no, they don't regard anything as an investment. It's just, what's the cost? What's the cost? What's the cost? And a SaaS is not a transaction. You cannot and should not transact with a SaaS. It's a journey of transformation. And you can only transform where you get guidance. You cannot transform on your own. You need somebody to help you, and that's where you need to pay for that. It's not a lot of money to pay for it, but it's like all good CEOs, all good business owners, all good athletes recognize the importance. If somebody knows more than you, pay for a bit of guidance for a period of time, and you will reap the rewards in due course, massively, massively more than any potential cost. And I call them the dynamics. So if you're a dynamic and you're willing to take action and get guidance, SaaS will serve you well, whoever you choose. It's not about whether people would resonate with me or not. There are many people who are willing to offer guidance. So talk to a few, sound them out, see who you resonate with, and then you can start to form your own opinion. But first of all, decide for yourself, are you a drifter and you'll just keep sucking in information, or you're a DIY, just want the cheapest? And there's some dangers of going cheap with SaaS because you then become responsible for everything. And my experience is the people who do it on the cheap, they get so scared because, you know, if they do it wrong, the revenue will find them and therefore they do nothing. Or are you a dynamic? Are you kind of, well, I suspect in your community, you know, they invest in themselves because they know that that investment will pay them back.
Absolutely.
And that's who I am. I'm a dynamic.
And I think one of the great things about that sort of analogy is also that it take, you know, dynamism takes energy, it takes momentum, but it takes consistency as well. I mean, you'll see I've got my sports gear on, Kevin, and I'm sorry to say that over the next 7 or 8 months, you're going to hear a lot more about my training for the London Marathon, because I got in on the ballot this year. And so on the 3rd of March, London Marathon again. So I'm starting my training plan. I've already started it. I'm building up my miles and pace and so on. So you're going to see me a lot in my sports gear, because consistency is key. And you know, I've run a marathon once before. I've done various half marathons, other races, but to hit that goal and to hit my I've got a time goal in mind as well, which is probably for many people. Nothing, but for me it's quite a big stretch. So I know that to achieve that goal, it's a bit like what you're talking about with regard to pensions, is that sometimes you can feel it's such a long way off, and you can leave it. And you know, for a lot of people, they'll start training 12 weeks before the marathon and still be fine and definitely beat me. But I know for me, I need to take longer over my training plan. It's more of a it's more of a challenge for me. I'm not really probably a natural runner, and I really only started running a few years ago. But I know that for me, if I consistently train and I stick to a plan and I keep the energy and I keep the focus and I keep the momentum, then there's no reason why I can't hit that goal in October. And I feel it's the same with pensions, that you have to adopt a long-term strategy here. And by adopting that longer-term strategy where you say, okay, it's going to take a bit of time. I might not see the rewards of my labours immediately, but I'm going to keep that momentum. I'm going to keep the dynamism going. I'm going to keep the focus, keep the energy. Mm. And that is massively helped, of course, by working with other people who are doing it and who are specialists in the field. You too can hit that goal. And, you've seen many people do that, Kevin. I've spoken to a few people who've achieved, massive results using their pensions to invest in. And I think it's a really, really powerful strategy. So it's incredible from the tax point of view as well, which is what we don't often talk about, but that is absolutely critical to getting good results.
Yeah, I see the parallel, and you're quite right. You know, it does take time, effort, energy, and some discipline to a process. That's certainly true. I would say, however, just one point of difference, and it's always good to talk to people because you get distinctions and differences, right? So, which is what I think is the art of wisdom. It's the ability to listen, but to make distinctions and differences that will lead to helping somebody else achieve a difference. And I'm hoping that's what I'll do. If one person does something that changes their wealth, then the result will be great for me. Now, as far as pensions are concerned, I think that's true of a long-term pension. I think with SaaS, it's faster than that because, you know, you don't have to wait till you're 55 or 60 to get access to the benefit today. Do you remember I said you can lend yourself money? So if you lend yourself money today and you're 40, you can buy an HMO tomorrow at 40. You don't have to wait till you're 60 or 65 and get the tax-free cash out, you know, when you're 55, which is the earliest date. So we've got so many of our students who've unlocked their pension and getting a result today or 100 days later. So, you know, probably less than the time it takes you to train for a marathon, they could be getting a higher level of return if they're the right type of people who are willing to do the right kind of action. So agreeing with a parallel, but with a twist.
Yeah, which is even better news.
Even better.
So, Kevin, somebody who's interested in, you know, utilising maybe a pension pot they already have or a SIPP that they might already be investing in, they may have a limited company because they are investing in property anyway. That would be, you know, an ideal situation for somebody to put in a call with you, spend some time with you, exploring what the options are, what the process would be and what the opportunities are.
Absolutely. And, you know, we know that this is a journey that takes people time and we encourage that time. We do three things, really, and I think it's important to stress them because it's true of our values as a company. First of all, we put an awful lot of effort into good education. So we provide books for people who like to read. We've got videos. We got kind of e-books and guides for people like short shop, you know, things like that. So we've written a guide called The 7 Key Reasons Why Any Property Professional Must Consider a SaaS. Right? So it's shorter and sharper rather than a book for those people who like kind of steely work and like to really understand the technical stuff. And you can. There's no problem with understanding that. The second is we just want to be there as a guide. So we provide some support, help people do a cost-benefit analysis on where they are now, what returns they'll get, what their current fees are, and so they can get good guidance and connect them. So we're a huge community now, 5,000 of us now. So anybody who wants to do anything, we've done it, right? And frankly, if somebody came to me and said, I want to do this, and we've never done it, I'm jumping for joy because that means there's thousands of people who probably wanted to do that but didn't know how to do it, and we'll find a way. And then the latest one was, I want to buy some commercial property in Colombia. How do I do that? I have no clue at all how we do that with your SaaS, but we found a way. And then, you know, so we create that possibility. Now, I'm not saying that's going to be a big winner, but certainly anybody who loves HMOs, we've got hundreds of people who've used their pension to get HMOs, either using their money or other people's money. So if that's your kind of specific area of interest and expertise, and your readership or your listenership or your those who follow you want to know that, we will make connections to say, go and talk to Fred, to Julie, to another sassy person or a sassy sister and say, you know, go and have a look and see what they've done. Obviously not in person at these times, but and then you can see, is this really possible? Yes. Is this really doable? So the education comes to life. And that's a much better place to be than just sticking your head in a book and hoping you can understand it, or go to bed with a pension tax manual and hope you can read that and somehow. It's like, you know, reading the highway code and hope you can drive, or reading the internal combustion engine and hoping it's going to get you from here to Paris. It's just not going to work that way. It doesn't work that way. You have to get involved. So it will suit people who are willing to get involved and take their time.
Great. So I think for people who are watching this and thinking, okay, what should my next steps be? Put in a call with you, email you, we'll put your contact details under the video, Kevin, so that anyone can get in touch with you. And then you can take them through a step-by-step process, give them time to answer their questions.
Absolutely.
Which would be absolutely great, because obviously every person is so different that to a certain degree on an interview like this, it's very difficult for you to give specific advice and guidance for individuals because
Well, look, everybody's risk appetite is different, personality is different, pot size are different, willingness to do things are different. Everything is going to be different, but the issue is it's just money.
Yeah.
And the question I always ask, and I start this question off whenever I meet anybody who's got a pension, which is, if the wrapper wasn't there, if the box didn't exist, and this was just money in your bank, what would you want that money to do? Let's see how close to that idea we can get. Now, everybody can think that through for themselves, right? They would know, I'd love to buy Bitcoin. Right, we can do that. I'd love to buy an HMO. Okay, it's a bit more complicated, but you can do that. I'd love to buy an office and convert it into 17 apartments. Yeah, we can do that. So it's just, what would you do? And then wave that wand and see how close you can get to that based on experience and good compliance and teach you how to do it. Right. So it's fun. It's fascinating. I love it. You can tell. And I'm glad that you're slowly becoming converted too. And hoping more of your peeps do as well, and more women, please. You know, we want more women to step up to the plate and get control of their own pensions, and be great to get some case studies from more women who are doing that.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, listen, Kevin, thank you very much indeed for your time today. Really appreciate you coming on. And it'd be great if maybe in another 6 months' time we can have you on again. What we could do is maybe do a Q&A session as well. There might be people who've got questions and answers. They don't necessarily, perhaps don't feel ready to book a call, but they want to get some questions answered. So anybody who feels they've got questions for Kevin about pensions, please put them below on the Facebook. I'll make sure he gets copies of all of them and replies. And yeah, I think it'd be great to do a Q&A in another few weeks or months' time, and to go a little bit deeper again, because I think it's just really good to keep that message going out there. And I'm really, really grateful for your time today, Kevin. Thank you so much for being here. And we'll put your details below the video, and then everyone can see those and contact you as and when they are ready to get going with their SASSes.
Right, and good luck with your training, and I look forward to hearing more off screen of what your magic time is. So looking forward Brilliant. To that. Thanks again for the invitation.
Thank you so much, Kevin. Bye for now.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the HMO Success Podcast. If you'd like to know more about how you can create a profitable HMO business, please visit our website, hmosuccess.co.uk, to find out more. We have plenty of free tools and information for you there, and also on our Facebook group, The Ultimate HMO Success System. We look forward to connecting with you very soon. Thanks for listening.